Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You've got to fade yourself out, yeah? Huh? Well, I can't reach that, so you've got to fade it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
It's this one, yeah?
Yep.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here we are in the rugby dungeon without Phil, who is where at the minute?
He's backpacking with a one-year-old. He's backpacking his one-year-old and his wife around Bangkok or something.
He's got a one-year-old in Bangkok.
Something like that.
Phil's...
He's literally, I think he's gone on holiday with his one-year-old son and his wife, and I think he's got five internal flights. It's during a holiday only Phil would do.
Well, that is JB. How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. How are you?
Good to see you back in like normal civvy clothes. Like
yes.
Shorts that are about 30 years old.
Yes, exactly right.
Excellent. But we do have a replacement for Phil. We have the better half of the Gloucester Rugby Club podcast as well. The Shed. What's it called? The Podding Shed.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the better half of that podcast. Mark Atkinson.
But tell you what a talent Mark very Atkinson good. Is.
Also...
Hello?
Oh, God, oh, no. He can't hear us at the minute, can he?
Yeah, I can.
It's the other one. It's the other one, isn't it? Oh, Ed! Hi, Ed!
Yeah.
How you doing?
Hi, guys. How you doing? Thanks for the nice intro. I'm used to those with Sam Roberts.
That's Ed Slater, everybody. Star of Gloucester. Currently not playing, though. So, first one, where are you in your rehab, Ed?
Getting there. I'm a few weeks off, but I obviously broke my foot 9-10 weeks ago, so I had some surgery. I'm just... Yeah, working my way back to fitness as we speak.
How do you break it during a game?
I broke it in the warm-up.
What?
Playing against my old club, Leicester. A bit of a calamity of a day, really. But basically, I'd had a bit of a bruised foot. Nothing that you'd be worried about, or so I thought. And then I was warming up and running around and doing whatever I needed to do. And something kind of went in my foot. But didn't think a great deal of it, and then cracked on with the game. Went to chase a kickoff, and then something really went in my foot.
What?
You know, like an explosion in the foot. So I was kind of limping around for a minute or two, and my head had gone. I think I charged at the 10 that was playing for Leicester on the day. Got yellow carded, and then couldn't come back on the pitch, and been out since. So
now,
it was a bit of a nightmare of a day.
Was that one of those things where you'd played a bit? Because of the adrenaline and playing the game, you can sort of put it to one side. But then when you stop, you kind of realise it was a little bit more serious than you originally thought.
I think, well, based on speaking to a surgeon, I think I probably had a bit of a stress fracture in that warm-up, and then went to crack on with it. And after chasing the kickoff, it just completely snapped. So, I think it's just the way things go sometimes.
Well, as we're having foot-based anecdotes, do you remember the goalkeeper for Spain, Iker Casillas?
Yeah.
Do you remember that he missed a World Cup because he broke his foot?
No, I don't know that.
I didn't know that, but
yes.
go on.
Iker Casillas broke his foot on the eve of the World Cup because he dropped a bottle of champagne on it.
Oh, well, that's a lot better than the old... I remember there was a Chelsea defender that basically ended his career by dropping a bottle of salad cream on his foot.
yeah, I remember that. Although that's not the most embarrassing injury I've had.
Mine
is obviously slicking my hand open.
Trying to cut
a bagel.
We talked about this.
Probably add to one of them comedy lists.
Yes.
Was that a frozen bagel?
No. It was a bagel. It was just a normal bagel.
It's almost as middle class as apparently one of the most common. Injuries at hospital is someone trying to cut an avocado through.
No, shucking
thanks,
oysters.
Tim. I was trying to stick to the nutritionist's advice of having a healthy bagel in the morning with eggs. So
that is embarrassing.
Yeah, no, I went through it with a bread knife and came out the other side, and obviously cut my hand. So yeah, ringing Cocker's was actually probably the worst thing about it.
I can only imagine.
The cut was fine. Actually, speak to Cocker's on the phone was more embarrassing thing.
Were you more nervous about calling him than you were freaked out by his response?
Was I more nervous?
Well, as in, was he as bad as you imagined he was going to be when you called him up?
No, I think he was still in a bit of shock when I was explaining it to him, because it was the morning of a game. We were going to play Sale at Welford Road. And, I mean, this thing was, you could see right down to the bone. It had gone right through.
What were you cutting with, like a samurai sword?
Well, it was actually a brand new block of knives, stupidly. So I thought, I'll get the bread knife out. You know, I've paid a bit of money for these.
Good God.
And just nicked the end of the bagel to cut it in half. And, yeah, it was a bit sharper than my previous one. So, anyway, yeah. And then he obviously let slip to the press, which I was absolutely gutted about.
Is it weird that you guys have in club chefs?
Do we have in club chefs?
No, it's no wonder. It's no wonder you do.
Oh right,
they take as much of that food prep away from you as possible.
Near a knife.
Right,
it does make me look stupid, but I'm not the worst. I tell you.
We have got a lot to talk about. Obviously, the fifth round of the European Champions Cup, of which Edster are still in the hunt for a knockout position. We'll get into that in a little bit. But some news this week. Firstly, actually, and this is one I really want to ask you about. Ellis Genge, both to the press and on another podcast, made a lot of comments about a loyalty or lack of, or whether there should be more or less from clubs to players. What was your view on that, Ed? Do you think? What would you think? Do you think clubs are a mercenary in the way that they treat players?
Well, I jokingly messaged Ellis afterwards and said, "Why did you have to bring Johnny May into it?" But I did read and hear about what he said, and he kind of said both points. And he said, "You know, the clubs don't need to show a great deal of loyalty, and the players don't need to show a great deal of loyalty." So. For me, my opinion is that there are certain players that you'll get that will want to be loyal, that will want to be one club men. And there are also a lot of players, particularly as money's coming into the game more and more, that will move around to suit themselves. And I think as that happens, you realise that clubs have been running businesses like that for a long time now. You know, they're loyal to the players they want to keep. And they're not so loyal to the guys they want to get rid of. And it just depends on where on the spectrum in terms of how good you are or not as to how you get treated, really. So I just think players have become more aware now that the clubs are happy to let them go if they're of no use or they can't fit them into the cap or whatever, and probably using that to their advantage now.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say on that, like, I think it's one of those cases now that if you want to be a one-club man, you certainly can do that, but you maybe have to reassess what your value is to that club. And maybe, you know, if staying in a certain area is important to you, understand that you need to be paid 10% less than maybe what you could get elsewhere, maybe even more. I think you can do it. It's just one of those things.
You say that, but we won't delve too deep into the details, but let's take my situation with Johnny.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't ever really in my mind going to leave Leicester. But the proposal came up that Johnny wanted to leave. And as part of that, you know, I was going to go in the other direction. So in the end, it was for the best that I went. But you say, you've got to reevaluate your value. And sometimes if the club don't want to keep you,
no.
Or if they don't want a certain player, it doesn't matter how much of a pay cut you offer to stay there. They may not want you. So I'm not necessarily sure that rings true.
And I would just kind of add that, you know, in any job, ultimately everybody has a value to an organisation. But when you leave, you don't keep the company car and the laptop, you hand them back. So when you do end a contract with a club, by their choice or yours, there's no obligation for a club to keep you on in the hospitality, entertaining people, or give you a job in the business department or a coach or whatever. It is a business, ultimately, isn't it?
And they're not even that big of organisations, truth be told.
This is true. But one thing Ellis did bring up, which I kind of wanted to just make sure people knew about, is the work of the RPA, because I actually, and I've witnessed this, and obviously you at Nottingham, you know, very, very early in your career, you were packing down at second row alongside my brother, who was a Premiership player, not the note that you were, but, you know, he reached the Premiership.
He's a great player, Rousey.
Yeah, he had a good time of it. But the RPA, I mean, this is a guy that got no GCSEs whatsoever. All he ever did was rugby, and he's got a degree now and loads of coaching badges, and the RPA is the reason why. So the work they do, I actually think, should be flagged up.
Yeah, because they certainly try.
They do a lot of effort. But I imagine that thinking about what might be coming in a few years' time, Ed, is something you're considering, particularly when you've had this time off the field injured.
Are you saying I'm an old bastard? I think about it regularly, and I wasn't just thinking about it now I'm injured. You know, I've been thinking about it for 3 or 4 years, because, people are always saying to me, it's never too early to start thinking about what you're going to do after rugby. Mm-hmm. Don't wait until the end is handed to you. So I did a master's up at Salford Uni, which was in a sporting directorship, because I'm interested in sports management. I'm interested in staying in rugby. And I'll try and do whatever I can over the next kind of 3-4 years to add to that, whether it's going and coaching at some local rugby clubs, just get a bit of experience, try out some ideas with those guys, try and do bits with the academy to get some experience there, and just try and shadow people where I can, so that when the end does come, I'm in a position where I've got a decent, you know, education behind me, but I've also got some practical experience as well. So that's my plan. Who knows if it will go to plan? You need to be in the right place at the right time. But I think, you know, for me, it's just about having confidence in myself and backing myself to do a good job wherever I get the chance.
For sure. Now, before we get into Champions Cup, Saracens are the gift that keep on giving. I mean, one question, who will be first? Jeremy Corbyn condemning Iranian dictators or Stevens condemning Saracens?
Yeah, two of the most evil empires on earth. Good question. A great question. I genuinely don't know, but I am enjoying the whole Saracens thing. I know I shouldn't. I know that they've done terrible, terrible things, but it makes it so much more entertaining. I mean, I'm almost a Saracens fan now. I don't mind saying that.
Who was the fella that did that article or wrote that thing? The legal bod saying
Lord Dyson, Master of the Rolls.
Yeah, Lord Dyson, but basically has said, I don't understand why the report hasn't been published. What are you doing? And now, didn't Saracen say, oh, we want to release the report? I'd love to release the report. Why is the report not coming out? I mean, I'm sure, I don't know, you probably can't comment on any of this, Ed, so...
It happens at all levels, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
These reports just get put into a drawer and closed and locked.
I don't know. I mean, do you know what kind of makes me feel a little bit sad? It's how much money has been wasted on report writing. I mean, like, these guys aren't cheap.
Maybe that's what I need to do after rugby.
Yeah. Well, do you remember when Sean O'Brien got done in, not this World Cup, the last World Cup, for, I don't know, whatever he did wrong? And it was, you know, it was nothing too bad. It was nothing out of the ordinary for a rugby game, but maybe it was a high tackle or some such thing. And because the ref didn't deal with it, he had to go to some disciplinary panel. And they had a barrister write him a report, which is at least 3 pages long. And that's got to cost, I don't know, hundreds of pounds. Report writing in rugby is worth a lot of money.
I think I think you're right, Ed. I think there is a business there. Maybe you should have a rethink. I genuinely do.
Not if I have to be a QC.
Well, other than that, I don't know. There hasn't been a great deal of news this week. There's lots of rumours surrounding George Cruz. What kind of esteem do you hold him in, Ed? Guy in your position?
Yeah, really high esteem. I think he's. I think in terms of thinking about the game, the way he runs the line out. He's a very smart player, and obviously, you know, his CV speaks for itself, really.
Yeah. Do you know when you guys look at Saracens, as lads speak in the change room and whatnot? Did you ever feel that they look suspiciously strong?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to look at it as just plain black and white. Are they cheating? I think. For me, you know, I respect that they've developed a lot of players that come through and played at the highest level. And keeping those guys happy and keeping them well paid is very difficult with the cap. isn't it? As well as adding to your squad.
Yeah.
You know, I also look at the kind of the way they've looked after their players. So all these things they've added at the training ground, things like being able to take your kids and having a creche and, you know, work opportunities, things like that outside of the club has been really good. And a lot of guys have benefited from that, and it's kept guys at the club. So there is a side to them that is, you know, all about the welfare of the players, looking after them. They've come up with new ways to do it and new ideas. And, you know, I've got a lot of respect for that. And it's difficult to justify the fact that they are over the cap, but you can kind of see how they've developed these guys. You know, things have gotten around the ground, new ideas. Has obviously had to push the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, before the report was released, you know, and the allegations were made, I wasn't that far away from Stephen Jones in my thinking, which was the case of, like, you know, I think they're not over the cap. In fact, I actually thought that they'd done things, like you mentioned, Ed, which all around the club, the crash, the welfare, the fact that all those players always seem to like being together. To me, I thought they could actually have done it. But now the report comes out and I feel like a bit of an idiot. Like, I should have been a bit more cynical, really.
Or the report doesn't. Or the report comes out kinder. But we're never going to see it. As much as Saracens say, oh, we want to release it, I don't think it'll ever come out.
Well, the more people that read it, the more it's going to leak. And eventually, there'll be no point in not releasing it, because there'll be so much information out there which is true, mixed with some stuff which is false, that it'll be for the benefit of everyone that we know actually what's in it.
Okay. Maybe so. But anyway, George Cruz was one name mentioned. There's others.
Matt Gallagher to
Munster.
Munster's an incredible one.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to hear loads of these rumours over the time. Some of it, I think, is going to be agent speak. You know, when you hear... I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you can or can't say, Ed. But I'm getting more and more cynical about a lot of these rumours that pop up that this might be kind of agent speak, engineering potential things.
That's what agents do. That's their job.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, why would you be cynical?
Yeah.
Lazowski to Bath is another one, which I quite like.
Well, they've been hunting a 10. Maybe they want. They're telling me he can play 10.
There is a 10.
Oh, I don't think that'll happen.
What, Lazowski going back to 10 or going to Bath?
Going to Bath, I don't think that'll happen.
Why is that then?
I think he's very happy at Saracens. I think he's a class player. I'm sure they would have offered him a deal to stay. I'd just be very surprised if someone like him left Saracens.
Yeah, I mean, he is exactly the sort of player that they want to keep. I mean, imagine being Mark McConnell. It's like deciding which of your favourite children that you want to, you know, keep about.
McCall's choice.
McCall's choice, yeah.
It is a horrible situation. I imagine, you know, with the success they got, they're not going to fall to the bottom. I know they're at the bottom of the table now with the deduction, but they're not going to fall to the bottom of the table and turn into a rubbish side overnight. I think they'll probably give the opportunity to a lot of players that maybe they'll have to take a pay cut. And I think some of those will be happy to do that for the club. Mm. And there'll obviously be guys that have to leave because either they want more money and that's their priority, or the club can't afford to keep them. So I think there'll be a lot more players stay than maybe you think.
Sorry to put you on the spot here, right? But just say if I came to you with a deal, and the deal is this, right? I assume you're very happy at Gloucester?
Yep.
Okay. So the deal is you can win a Premiership and a European Cup two years running, four trophies in all next 2 years. How much of a pay would you take percentage wise?
A fair bit.
Really? 25%?
If you could guarantee me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a fair bit, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess there is scope for manoeuvre then.
And that's why I made the point that I think there'll be guys that will be happy to take a pay cut.
Would you take that pay cut?
Because they're either really comfortable and happy with their playing with their friends and in that environment, you know.
Would you take that pay cut if none of your other teammates did? Because I imagine that's where it kind of gets a bit squirrely, which is, you know, if some lads say, yeah, I can do it, and other lads, completely because, well, maybe they've, you know, got financial commitments, which means they can't.
They should do it in a game. You know those game shows where they have steal and share? They should do it like that.
Well, I guess it's a serious point, isn't it? Like, you know, I would take a pay cut if everyone took a pay cut. But then you have someone like Tim, you know, on his BT money. And, like, he wouldn't take a pay cut. So, like, do I take a pay cut so Tim can stay on full pay?
I think they'll have to be fairly open about the process. You know, I don't think it's going to be cloak and dagger about trying to coax people into taking pay cuts, but not others. They're going to have to be fairly open about it.
I guess they just offered the new
contract.
Would
be my thoughts.
Yeah. Hey, listen, let's get on to a bit of rugby for this weekend. And I thought, right, I'm going to try and summarise where we are after five rounds.
Okay.
Okay. So here's where we are. We've got four pool winners that are through. Racing, Toulouse, Exeter and Leinster. The final pool winner is likely to be Clermont, but could still be Ulster. Mm-hmm. None of those teams have a guaranteed home quarter final as it stands. All of them have winnable games next week, except for Toulouse, obviously, who are going down to Gloucester in flames. All have games they could win next weekend. So it could even come down to points difference for seedings, apart from Leinster, who are going to be the top seeds. It's what I'm thinking. As for the three runner-up spots, Ulster will get one of them by the look of it. Being at home to Bath, meaning the two remaining spots are going to come from most likely Saracens, who you'd think would be favourites to beat Racing at home with all their big guns, with one more final spot and a likely trip away to Leinster, the prize for either Gloucester, Northampton, Glasgow or Munster. Now, Gloucester have the hardest task going to Toulouse. We can get onto that with Ed. Winning there looks a tough ask. Not impossible, but tough. If Saints win in Lyon, they'd likely go through as a result. But if Gloucester and Saints lose, it opens the door for Glasgow away at Sale. And it's only if Glasgow also lose that Munster could potentially sneak in through the back door. They're home to Ospreys with probably probably the most likely fixture of any to be a 5-point win next weekend. Mm-hmm. So my prediction for the quarterfinals, and I apologise for this, Ed, but it's only my prediction, and I've been wrong more than I'm right. Leinster top seed at home to Northampton. Exeter second seed at home to Saracens. Imagine that in a European quarterfinal. Toulouse third seed home to Ulster. Clermont fourth seed home to Racing. It's some challenge you've got next week, Ed. How are the boys talking or thinking about a trip to Toulouse? Just kind of no fear, give it a crack, nothing to lose?
Look, I think we were amazed considering we'd only won one of the games that we were still in the hunt for the knockout stages, to be honest with you. It's a bit of a freak year, I imagine, if you go back. So for us, it was kind of like a third chance saloon for it, really, coming into the last weekend of Europe in the group stages. So we obviously got those 5 points yesterday and... You know, we've got everything to play for against Toulouse. I think they're obviously a really dangerous side. They play pretty open games, similar to us. So I guess it's going to be the best defence wins. Because I feel like we have, you know, I think we scored the most tries in the Premiership.
Yep.
Conceded the least.
I know. I was going to say, that's six games in a row you've got try bonus point and another clean sheet.
I was not aware of that.
No tries conceded yesterday.
Three games.
Yeah.
But the Prem doesn't necessarily reflect that because we probably we've missed a few opportunities. You know, we probably haven't got some of the kicks at goals that would have won us games. Have been a difference sometimes, small margins. But look, I think if we go over there and give it a crack, we've got to believe we've got a chance based on our previous form in terms of scoring tries and have a bit of faith in our defence, but there's no doubt to lose away is a really, really difficult game.
And you talk about tight margins. You could, and I mean, do you look back as should have been five wins out of five? You could quite easily
have been. That Connacht game, obviously, at their place, we should have won.
11 points up.
That was really hard to take.
Yeah.
Just our discipline in that last 10 minutes was really poor. And we've been fairly open about that. Obviously, to lose at home, we weren't in a great place at the time. I think we'd lost two on the bounce, three on the bounce in the Prem, and we were just lacking a little bit of confidence. And I feel like that was the difference in that game. Mm. But certainly, I feel like we could have picked up a few more points. I think Montpellier away, we went over there and everyone wrote us off because we put out quite a young squad.
Yeah, very young squad.
But we came back firing and we scored a lot of points, a lot of good tries, but it just wasn't enough. And our loose style of play, you know, in that game, we were running everything. I can't remember exiting the 22 from watching it.
What was
probably, if we'd have just balanced it out a little bit more, we could have come away with a win.
What was the thought of going with that younger team to Montpellier?
I think Johan's really open about giving everyone an opportunity rather than just relying on the same 23 week in, week out.
Yeah.
He wants to drop players in there and see how they handle it. And Montpellier away in Europe's a pretty difficult ask. Yeah. But I thought, you know, people showed, like Lloyd Evans, you know, hadn't played for a few weeks and done really well in pre-season, played really well in the Prem Cup. And he came into that game and I thought he played really well, particularly in a position like 10. But, you know, like I say, Johan has real confidence in all the squad. He thinks about, you know, why he might change things, how he might change things. And it's not always going to be the predictable 23 every weekend, which is a good thing, because those guys that maybe haven't played in a few weeks will have a bit of a carrot during training. You know, they've still got something to work for. They know that he will change things up.
And equally in the game yesterday, he gave opportunities to some guys, made a few changes. I thought the hooker, Todd Gleave, looked ace.
Yeah.
He looked really good.
Yeah, and again, he's a bloke and he works really hard. You know, I sat down with him and we watched lineouts. We talked about his throwing. We talked about the movements. You know, we work quite a lot together, analysing training and our games. And, you know, he's really hungry. He really wants that opportunity. And he's had a few minutes off the bench. And Franco Murray, I think, pulled out or just before. And he got his chance. I thought, like you said, I thought he was really good. So I'm just pleased for him. And as I say, it's good. It's good for the squad that these guys come in and they get their chance and they take it.
Ed, what's the song after a game? Because I saw a little video of Todd Gleave whacking a bin in the changing room. Because obviously we know about the Tiki Tonga with Saracens, and there's the Bristol have the Wurzels. What's the Gloucester post match song?
Well, I know the words. It hasn't really got a name.
I guess best
Gloucester
sing it.
Rugby post-match win song.
Give us a chorus.
Want the chorus?
What are the words?
Mate,
just some
sacred.
Of them. Sacred. Okay,
it's
fine.
Sacred.
Fair enough.
We see the pictures sometimes from the changing room cameras, but...
Have to turn the volume up.
Yeah, we'll have to.
In fact, I'll be telling them not to record it now.
So, talking about young lads in Gloucester, I mean, obviously, we're going to have to talk about Lewis Rhys Zammit. We only found out this week it's not Louis, it's Lewis. We've been saying it wrong.
Right.
But Lewis Rhys Zammit, this guy's legit, isn't he?
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Is he this ridiculous in training? When he starts against Montpellier, were you thinking, yeah, they're in for it now? They have no idea what is coming.
Well, we kind of heard a few whispers about him last year, carving up in the 18s. And you saw a few of his tries and you thought, all right, you know, he's scoring some nice tries in the under 18s league. when he gets his chance, let's see if he can do it. And he came into pre-season this year and obviously like the lads, I can't remember if he's 18 or 19, one or the other, but he's like 6'2", 6'3" and properly built, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like most 18, 19-year-olds. And obviously, ridiculously quick. Like, I haven't seen many players as quick as him, if any.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So he just came in and he moves well, he's skillful, and obviously he's rapid. And, I mean, it's unbelievable how things have fallen into place for him, to be fair. But you've got to give him the credit for taking his opportunities.
And it was last year when everyone was raving about Ollie Thorley. Wow, look at the impact he's having.
Ollie
now
Thorley,
he's given
like
a run.
He's 23 now. He's old news.
He's old news.
Yeah, no, the talent coming through. You've got to give credit to the guys underneath that are doing the job, obviously. The speed, I mean, Thorlow's a completely different kind of player, I think, to Lewis. But to have both of them in your side is pretty special, I think.
Yeah. 100%. Now, listen, you're one of the leaders at Gloucester. You can have a word in people's ear and they listen. So come on, I'm Welsh nonsense. Can you just have a word with Lewis and get that sorted?
Can you explain to him what 20 grand a game buys?
He's had a few people drop that in, yeah. But mate, he's not having any of it. The lad's Welsh through and through. I hope he gets a chance to play in the Six Nations. I'd love to see him.
Wait till he gets a call from Uncle Eddie.
Well, he's had one, hasn't he?
Has he?
Is that true? Was that a rumour, or did he actually have a call? Do you know?
I've got no idea. I'm sure they would have would have got in touch. Not that they'd tell me, but he wants to play for Wales, and I think it could happen very soon. Hopefully, yeah. if he continues as is, I'd be surprised if they didn't get him involved.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's segue just briefly to players that might be added to an England squad. I mean, just one thing though, Ed. You're on that list of guys that should have got a cap, but through just bad luck, didn't.
That lovely list.
That lovely list with Dan Ward-Smith and...
Pete Anglesey? Pete Anglesey was one of the best players never to get a cap.
Okay.
I didn't see him play.
Yeah.
No, I don't really remember. But But Ed, you were... do you look back on that? Are you able to... Now, is enough water gone under the bridge that you can just kind of go, hey, one of those things...
Yeah, I'll always be gutted about it. You know, I'll always look back and go, oh, that was something I really wanted to achieve. You know, that was kind of the ultimate goal. But, you know, things don't happen as you want them to all the time. So I have made peace with it. I think, you know, I had some enjoyable times involved in the squads, and I learned a fair bit, and I got to know some other guys who I get on with really well. And, you know, I had a nice experience, like going to New Zealand, and those bits, and very a fortnight in the World Cup camp, which was lovely. But you know, things didn't work out. My body just wasn't holding up at the time, and I missed my opportunity. So it's just the card I got dealt.
Now you can just be one of those guys in the pub in like 30 years' time. I should have got an England. I would have got an England cap. You can just
that desperately
guy.
Sad, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah. but as for the new breed that might get added to the England squad, now I don't expect Eddie to do what France have done. That France's squad is bonkers.
They have thrown the baby out with the bathwater.
Is
it any more bonkers, right, than when Lancaster picked his first squad?
Yes.
Why?
I'd say it's more like when Clive Woodward picked his first squad. I remember Clive Woodward did the same thing. He just went, right, I'll get all the kids in. And at the time, no disrespect, because I've got a lot of time for Flats. Love him, obviously. But he was one of the guys that was, and people like Andy Long were beneficiaries. They came in and then probably weren't quite of the standard necessary.
Andy Long, the hooker.
And then quickly got kind of like edged out again. And Clive Woodward brought back in the experienced names. But I think France will reverse on what they've currently done, which is basically pick a load of kids.
I quite like the look of the squad, to be honest. It reminds me more of the Lancaster squads, where he basically got rid of everyone. Did Robert Shaw have 12 caps when he was appointed captain? Something like that. So, yeah, I think it's more Lancastrian than Woodwardian.
Well, Eddie won't do that, but there might be some young players added. So let me throw some names out there. We'll just a bit of a free-for-all. Lots of people are talking about George Furbank. Looks like he's going to get a shout at fullback.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with forwards, though, which is like your area of expertise, Ed. So the front row, Benno Abano and Will Stewart, do you rate them? You had a game against Bath recently.
I think obviously Will Stewart's doing a really good job. I think Loosehead's a difficult position to be coming through in the England squad still, isn't it? I think Mako and Genji, for me, are the top two in that position.
Okay, well, back row then. Let me throw these names. Which ones would you add if you were selecting? Alex Donbrandt, Ben Earl, Jack Willis, Tamana Harrison back in, or Ben Curry as a flanker/nine?
Mate, I like all of those.
They're
like
amazing,
Donbrandt. Big fan of Ben Earl. I think he's a brilliant player, and also think the same of Jack Willis. I think he's absolute class. So I'd like to see all those guys in.
The problem that you got with these guys now is every time you think of one, you think, yeah, he could be the one. And then you think, actually, no, it depends what you want to do with them, because they're all so good. It's basically, you know, the right player for the right situation, because I can't really split them. I think Ben Earl's incredible, but then I look at Willis, I think, God, he is actually the real deal.
He's brilliant. Yeah, he's brilliant.
But then,
I think Willis, probably for me, and I know I haven't played Test rugby, but he looks like he could slot into that Test arena pretty comfortably, I think, just with the size, the way he plays, the aggression he's got. Ben Earl's obviously a fantastic player, very quick, very athletic, isn't he? Kind of like an X-factor kind of guy. And Don Brandt just seems to be in the right place at the right time. But I think the overall package for me out of those guys would be Jack Willis.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think he's amazing. And also, he's one of those guys, no matter what the opposition is, he doesn't seem to play any worse. He always is consistent.
No, he's brilliant. He's got most turnovers in the Premiership, hasn't he? I think he got six in one game the other
week. Yeah, exactly, he did.
I'll tell you another interesting one too. And it won't come as much as a surprise that I'm mentioning this guy, but you ask anyone at Sale, you know, who is really good. Ben Curry is right up there.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably just in the shadow of his brother a little bit. Not rightly or wrongly, you know. You hear a lot more about Tom, don't you? And you see a lot more about Tom, and it probably just takes the light off Ben a little bit. But is he, you know, with the back row they've got, is he starting with John O'Ross, with Tom, with Dupree in there? Is he going to be starting over those boys? Or
no, he won't be starting over those guys.
They literally rotate them get game to game.
If it was a Premiership final, he would pick John O'Ross, Dan Dupree, and Tom Curry.
Well, I don't know. It just depends. And I don't even think that Tom Curry's his major competition now. I think it's Faf de Klerk.
Clearly. Right, here's one name then, because he someone with a really unique skill set, but and someone you've played with and spent a lot of time with at Leicester, and much like yourself, Leicester decided that they didn't need him. Harry Thacker, could he make it in a Test arena, or is his size an issue, do you think?
I personally think he's a brilliant player. I think size is something that will always get thrown at him. You know, he's not going to grow 2 or 3 inches. That's just not going to happen. So I think you've got to trust that his ability and what he's shown week to week has been first class. And, you know, the only way you're going to find out is by throwing him in at the deep end. And I certainly think he deserves an opportunity.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. I think we should celebrate the uniqueness of him rather than trying to. And this is quite an English thing, actually, to try and sort of find people to fit a mold rather than finding special talents where they exist.
He's got far more positives than negatives.
Yeah.
In fact, you could say his height is his only negative. Everything else, I think, is fantastic. But yeah, like I say, you have to throw him in there for me on form and see how he goes.
Yeah, it wasn't until someone rolled the dice on Neil Back that whole myth about him not being big enough was dispelled. So
yeah.
Well, what's Harry Thacker like as a teammate? Because I always assume, and this is really stereotypical, but because he's a smaller guy, I assume he either works really hard or he's really quick, or there must be something which makes him able to compensate for the fact that he's not the biggest of blokes.
Overly aggressive or something.
No,
he's not. He's a very laid back guy. He's obviously just had a boy as well, a little baby boy. So he's very much, you know, any spare time he gets down to the sea, he trains extremely hard. I think, you know, he probably makes up for his height by working hard in the gym.
Yeah.
Because physically he's very strong. But in terms of personality, he's pretty consistent. He's not overly aggressive or shy or anything. He's just pretty comfortable with himself, I'd say.
Right, I'll ask you both. In the centre then, because this is one position where I think Eddie Jones will be looking around at some other names. If you had to, JB, if you had to pick, I mean, they could end up with both of them, but if you had to pick Nick Topkins or England's Sonny Bill, as Carl Ferns dubbed him, Mark Atkinson, which would you pick?
I'm picking Mark Atkinson every day of the week, quite frankly.
Good man.
Like, he's been playing so well for so long. And I think because he's not had the name recognition, because he's come from Bedford, well, Wasps before that and Sale before that, but effectively Bedford to Gloucester, he just hasn't really had the profile. He does now. But for 2 years, he's been completely under the radar. I mean, doing brilliantly. I would do that every day of the week.
He's one of those guys, you'd argue, you know, was he being utilised properly?
Yeah.
Because he's been at Gloucester, what, five years, 6 years maybe?
Yeah.
Is it that long?
So he's been there a while now, yeah. And obviously since Johan's come in, I think he's thrived. And, you know, his biggest asset is he can play up the line. You know, he's got the skill to also pull off those passes, get his arm round, offload. But he's also taller than me and as a second row, which is quite demoralising. So he can take the contact. So he's been a massive part our squad the last couple of years in terms of pushing up the table. And in terms of a character, he's a brilliant person to have around.
I think there is also the element of him as well, which people forget. He was trying to make his bones in the Premiership originally as a fly half. So like as a,
yeah, we always laugh about that.
Yeah, and like you know, he did. He's a Premiership fly half, fine. But then that little move outside to 12, just a complete complete making of him, because you're going from an average kicking fly half to a brilliant kicking 12.
Again, people just look at the size of him sometimes, and again, you sort of mentally pigeonhole him, but he's got all the skills. I'd like to see him involved in the squad and had a look at.
Well, one of the things that I like most...
It's difficult, isn't it? You don't want to take too much away from Nick Tompkins, because I really like watching him play. He's a tough guy, isn't he, in terms of he carries hard for his size. But I just think, for me, the way Mark's been playing over the last few years, I think he could offer something really different to what they've got at 12 at the moment.
To be fair to Nick Tompkins, if I had Nick Tompkins, mate, on as a special guest of Egg Chasers, I would definitely have picked Nick.
You would have, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Easily bought, aren't you?
100%.
Right. As for the Champions Cup, I mean, just generally, Ed, how much do players watch rugby when they're not playing?
It's a good question.
Are there any guys that just don't watch?
There's plenty of guys that don't watch it. Plenty of guys. But you know, there's also lots of closet nausers in the squads as well that don't like to admit that they watch all the rugby games and know all the players and their heights and weights and positions covered. So there are plenty of those as well. So I obviously keep a lot of tabs on it because I'm a boring bugger. I don't really like anything else but rugby. So, but there are guys I know who would take the opportunity to switch off completely from it.
You've just reminded me of something which I really want to get to the bottom of. You said that they know players' names, heights, weights, and stuff.
I know where you're going.
And weight that's on Wikipedia or in the club program or comes up on the telly. When and who and how does that, and how accurate is that information?
Well, it kind of never changes from when you start out. So I don't know where mine originally came from, but I was 6'6" and about 110 kilos, which was exaggeration, you know, at the least. so I actually got them to change mine because I was more embarrassed about being labelled 6'6" and then turning up, you know, someone turned up to a game going like, hold on, he's not 6'6".
Who was that, your agent?
And he said, it would have been some, I don't know, the club media guy at the time or something. I got them to actually change it so that it wasn't deceptive, because it's actually really embarrassing being shorter than what your height in the programme says, because everyone goes, oh, look, it says you're 6'6", but
what,
probably you're like just 6'5", maybe 6'4".
He's 6'4"?
I'm 195 centimetres, which I think is just touches 6'5", but it's probably 6'4".
Well, on the flip side, I played at uni with Luke Charteris, and I'm telling you, he's 7 foot and doesn't want to put 7 foot down. He is 100% 7 foot tall.
He probably actually lies and says he's shorter.
Yeah, no, he does. He's definitely 7 foot tall. but that just sounds freakish, so he doesn't say it.
By all accounts.
no comment, Ed. Yes,
I'm just trying to think.
Long Dog was a nickname, if I remember rightly. I think he might have had a sausage dog as a pet. I think might be why. Anyway,
what was I say? Oh yeah, thinking of players that don't like rugby, right? One in particular stands out for me. Andy plays for Gloucester. Can you guess who?
Say again.
One player in particular stands up for me who does not like rugby. Like, he loves to play it. Does not know the first thing about who he's playing against, who plays for which team, directors of rugby, anything.
Danny.
Oh no! But is Danny in that group?
Well, no. He's just not very good at pronouncing names. So in a meeting, some of the players were playing and go, who? Alan, you know.
That guy.
Like, try and get him to say Niavara or something. He's talking about someone else.
I got a bit of stick for the way I said his name on Twitter. Some nauseas on Twitter.
How do you say it?
Well, because it's a...
Tekeli,
but it's... There's a Q for Fijians has an N It's like an. It's like, don't you remember former Gloucester player Akabusi Ungera?
Ungera.
Yeah. It's like there's an N first.
So how did you say it?
Tankele Nairavoro.
It should be Tankele Nairavoro.
Which is you put the N before the Q.
Ah,
have you asked him?
That'd be the best way, wouldn't it?
No, but I think the generally, trade secret here. I think we get it right more often than we get it wrong, and we hold our hands up like I did with the. I apologise on the telly to Lewis Rees-Sammet for getting his name wrong all this time. But I think our general approach is, as long as we all say the same thing, we can be all right or all wrong together.
Oh, kind of like a union.
Yeah exactly. Yeah,
well, so go on, sorry, who's the guy at Gloucester that doesn't like rugby?
Goes by the wrestling name Crisis.
Goes by the what, sorry?
The wrestling name Crisis.
Ah, Jamal.
Yeah, doesn't know the first thing about rugby. As in, like, it does not, has no interest in, like, who plays for Sale. It loves playing the game, but rugby is not his thing.
But knows everything about WWE.
Yeah, be fair, I haven't had a rugby conversation really with him, so...
To be fair,
I'll put him up on that tomorrow. But
yeah, he's too interesting to have a rugby conversation with.
He's more interested in cars, is he?
Oh, he's a fascinating guy. He can talk about all sorts.
What is the car park like when you come into training? Or like,
very, very, very mixed. Would you like examples?
Of course.
So obviously my best mate Fraser, he's currently rolling around in a 52 plate Ford Focus Estate.
Good lad.
The green hearse, we call it.
And I like the Christmas jib.
Then you go to the other end of the scale, and Franco Mostarts just treat himself to a G-Wagon.
Word. What is it with these South Africans in the Premiership?
Marland Yard has a G-Wagon.
Wow.
Which surprises nobody.
Has Francois Houhard still got his...
Not me, no.
What, in this Instagram life?
Marland Yard having a G-Wagon surprises nobody.
Okay.
I mean, so Franco Mostert's, very proud of his wheels. Who else?
Got off the top of my head, obviously Jamal.
He's got a Mustang. Had a Mustang.
Is there any real maverick like that either turns up in some sort of beaten up old thing or like a vintage car or a motorbike?
I'll tell you what, there's a bit of a trend with like old Land Cruisers.
They're pretty cool, though, aren't
they? So like Ruan Drea loves that. Franco Murray. Josh Honock has a beaten up Land Cruiser.
Oh, I can see him in
so
that.
So does Gerbrandt Grobler. So there's a few of the Land Cruisers patrolling about.
Well, you need a
mid-90s.
If you go around the Cotswolds, you need one of them.
Yeah, but they're actually quite trendy. I mean, they are genuinely trendy because it's things to do with they are cars without like computerized systems or whatnot, so they last longer. They're, like, it is a genuine fashion.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of them have done 180,000 miles and still running.
Yeah,
as if they've done 10. So that I think they're well built, but that's a thing at the club.
Good.
Otherwise, it's whatever lease car you can get your hands on.
Let's talk about some of the games the weekend. So, firstly, the game involving Saracens at Ospreys, a bit of a bonkers game. Saracens took a calculated risk, leaving some of their big guns for next week's game against Racing. In the end, it paid off. They got the 4 points, not the bonus point win that they would have wanted, but with a red card after 5 minutes, that was a banana skin that got a lot more risky for them. They got away with it. Firstly, on the red card. Have you seen it, JB?
I have. I saw it this afternoon. I missed it live because what was the other game? Was it Ulster?
It was Ulster Claremont at the same time. You're flicking between the two.
Having seen it, well, I'll let Ed react to it first.
Yeah, what do you think, Ed?
Well, obviously I'm going to sit on the fence a little bit because by the letter of the law and all, there's no black and white. He made contact with the head. But just, like a technical point when a guy is trying to squeeze between two players, if you're making that tackle, particularly from where Reece Carey came from, he's kind of the second man into the tackle. It's quite hard to wrap your arm when the guy's already been hit from the other side by another one of your players. You're kind of just trying to make contact with your shoulder. So that would be the reason why he didn't wrap his arm.
I completely agree.
He intentionally led with the shoulder, but it's actually when you're doing those two-man tackles, it's difficult to wrap your arm around.
It is.
When, and, you know, there's another guy on the other side, because you don't get a grip on anything. You don't get a hand on anything. So I know exactly how it's happened and why he's done it. And it's difficult, because I think those kind of contacts happen quite regularly in rugby.
Mm.
And he's just been picked out there.
I agree with you. And there's a different angle that showed that he's had a real clear wrap with his left arm. And yeah, as you say, there's nowhere for his right arm to go. So it's,
which is interesting. I've never really thought about that, because, you know, players are trained to, you know, double hit, you know, particularly against big runners. Well, he can't. If you're going shoulder to shoulder with your teammate, it's very, very hard to wrap.
I guess.
Well, you try and wrap your arm around your teammate and try and hit with your shoulder. You're probably dislocating your shoulder.
Exactly. I was going to say that. It's a bit of self-preservation
there. To actually hold your shoulder in place. Usually when you wrap your arm, obviously you've got a tight grip around someone. Your shoulder's tight. You add someone else's body to then wrap around your shoulder. I wouldn't want to know what your shoulder's doing.
The devil's advocate position would be, he was ever so slightly high. He could have been, if he was a few inches lower, then he probably would have got away with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case with every high hit, I guess, isn't it?
But
it doesn't always unfold like that.
But I do agree with you, Ed.
Just on the double tackle, I've got a feeling in France they're trying to push a trial. Sorry, Tim, I'm not talking into my mic.
There you go.
Not another trial.
Yeah, another trial of banning double hits. I'm absolutely certain
in one of the French low divisions they were going to trial it. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. Trial it, because then they'll realise it's an absolute joke.
Well, it might work. That's why you've got to trial it.
Just ridiculous. But anyway.
It's a red card, but it's a soft red, isn't it? It's a non-malicious soft red. I guess we all need to get on with our lives.
Yeah, I felt for Reece.
Yeah, Curry. I think that intent thing's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure the intent was there.
But no. It was amazing then, though, to see Saracens go and give away another yellow card. Because, you know, going down to 13, you get a sense then that they really don't want to win this game, which is incredible.
If any team can survive without a player or two players, I feel like it's Saracens with how they can control a game. They can almost play that kind of 10-man rugby, can't they?
Yeah.
Their set piece is very good. Their kicking game is very good. Their kick chase is good. As long as they're kicking well and they're chasing well, they can always keep teams kind of contained.
And you've just hit the key things there. I mean, the fact that Richard Wigglesworth is man of the match, and then that Alex Lewington try in the end is exactly what you just talked about.
They never panic. I mean, even when it was tight and it wasn't going their way, they look utterly calm, which is the exact opposite to what Ospreys look like. I mean, I can't work out Ospreys for the life of me. I mean, if you read their team sheets, there are some young lads in there. There are some lads that you don't particularly know. But there's also, like Tess Lyons there. And for whatever reason it is, they just can't pull it together.
Yeah, but not, you know, in those key positions, you know, that, you know, Alan Wynn's obviously second row. He's an inspirational player, but you know, there's only so much influence he can have on the game.
Yeah.
Same with Tipperick. So I just think they've probably been devastated by injuries, haven't they? And they're a team where the confidence is low. There seems to be problems up and down the organisation. So,
yeah, but I think they've got,
it's a difficult one.
I think they've got Anscombe's come back. They've got Owen Williams in the squad. They've got all these lads. Now, just watching this, obviously, we mentioned Alan Wynn there. Did you enjoy the tussle between him and George Cruz?
Cruz. I have to put up with JB and Phil calling him Cruis. I've actually stopped correcting him because they never pay me any attention
George
when
Cruz.
I do correct him.
Anyway. Okay, I'll ignore it. I felt that Ospreys looked better with Alan Wynn. Obviously, I think it raises everyone's game a little bit. And George obviously is just a good operator and. I'll be interested to see how he plays over the next few weeks with the Japan thing flying around.
Mm, yeah.
Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But, you know, that'll be something that'll be in my mind when I'm watching how he gets on.
They had a good old wrestle.
A literal wrestle.
Yeah, yeah, they were like pinning each other on the floor and they were really trying to rough each other up. Within, as far as they could push it legally.
What was the game? It was the Gloucester-Montpellier game, I think. There was clearly a... I think it was the Montpellier captain clearly has done a bit of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, because he got in that, what's that defensive position that when you're on your back with your legs wrapped around?
With Franco Mosta.
Yeah, with Franco Mosta. He got in a textbook BJJ defensive.
Franco, wasn't it?
It was.
Grab his legs and get him on his back.
Yeah, it was a good flip. It was.
Hang on.
Yeah.
What was the game? Was it your game? Where, it might have been your game against Toulouse, where they stole, did someone steal a lineup ball right at the end? And a South African said, oh yeah, I steal that ball because I went to school with the guy.
Yeah, it was that game.
Was it?
Elstad.
That's the one.
Elstad, Ryan Elstad, yeah.
Yeah. He said, yeah, I've known him for a long time, so I think I might have used that to my advantage there.
To be fair, I think he'd stolen about two or three before that. Yeah. So, yeah, he was in the zone, wasn't he, as you call it?
He was. As for the most bonkers game of the weekend, most entertaining to watch if you're a neutral, particularly.
The Sale, La Rochelle game?
Exeter, Glasgow. Oh. Exeter at Glasgow. I mean, firstly, I want to talk about this trend of European kits, which it seems like Gloucester have got rid of now, I'm glad to say. Does it affect you psychologically in any way when you pull on a disgusting kit?
No, not really. I mean, when it comes down to it. But you talk about it, don't you? When you see it, you go, oh, that one.
To be fair, Ed is a man's man. You know, I guess if he asked, like, yeah, I'll just pick someone at random. Someone like Danny Cipriani, who likes to look good, I don't think he'd be happy in the Exeter European kit.
Danny would know that he can look good in any kit. Yeah. That's the flip side.
That is true. Someone not quite as cool as Danny, who is equally as fashion conscious, would have a problem with that extra away kit.
I think those slimmer guys who are more image conscious would probably, as you say, but maybe look into it a bit deeper than me.
Nevertheless, with that lilac kit, Exeter, a 31-all draw, bonkers game, went back and forth, crossbar challenge completed by Stuart Hogg at the end of the match. Just a mad game.
I'll tell you what, Glasgow really, really impressed me. Like, they seem to lose players continuously, but they've got a good organisation. Guys carry on coming through, carry on improving. I thought Hastings was particularly good. And also, they play a very, very nice brand of rugby, which is important because they're basically against the polar opposite in Exeter, who can play nice, but tends to be a bit more muscular. And it was just a good contrast.
No,
they're very impressive.
I think Exeter are a little bit like where Gloucester are heading as well, where that balance between the real tough, horrible, nasty stuff.
Oh, they can do it, but Exeter have got a far better gnarly game than Glasgow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yes.
Far better.
But I actually think that's when rugby's at its best, when you have that real nasty, horrible stuff with the beautiful game as well.
Mm. Yeah, you have to have both, don't you? You have to be able to do both, because otherwise you get beaten up every week and you struggle to win games.
Have you ever played with a better carrying back row than the one that you've currently got at Gloucester? Because they are monsters.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is.
With Jake Paledry, I mean, what a quality player he is. And like, he just came out of nowhere as well.
The guy that I like, and no one really talks about him, is Freddie Clark. I love Freddie Clark.
Yeah, he's really good, but he's very quick. He's got a good step on him as well. He's quite an athletic bloke, considering he looks like a bag of sick. But no, I think we're really blessed in that department. Because another player who I really rate is Aaron Hinckley, who's coming through.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've seen a lot of him, but when he gets his opportunity, when he gets a run of games, I think he'll be another player that people will talk about in terms of a carrying ability.
Yeah, because I guess a guy who doesn't carry quite as hard as those other names, who I really rate, but I guess he's overshadowed, is Ludlow. Because the guy just tackles and tackles and tackles and tackles. But then on the other hand, maybe he doesn't quite carry like Ruan Ackerman does.
Yeah, but he's one of those players, isn't he, that you want in your side in terms of how competitive he is and the work he gets through.
Yeah.
He's got a ridiculous engine on him. And as you say, he's just tackling, 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 tackling all game, and just puts his body on the line as well, has no real care for himself. So those kind of players are worth their weight in gold as well.
So Johnny Gray is going to be moving from Glasgow to Exeter next season. These two teams were well matched up at Scotstoun. What difference would Johnny Gray have made if you'd have taken him out of Glasgow's side yesterday and plonked him in Exeter's side? What does a guy like that, What difference can one guy like that make with his skill set?
I think probably in terms of engine, like talking about Lewis Ludlow there, I just think the amount of work he gets through is enormous. And obviously as a set piece player, he's very good as well. But I think it's a really good signing for Exeter. I've always been a big fan of Johnny Gray. I think he's a brilliant player. And it would be a big loss to Glasgow and I think Scottish rugby really disappearing down into the Premiership.
Yeah, I mean, my thought on that signing is, I mean, Johnny Gray is a guy who makes a lot of tackles. And I think Exeter would do with a guy like that because their back row, in a very similar way to Gloucester's, is very carry-heavy. So they can have Ormond, they can have Ewers, they can have Simmons. Simmons, by the way, a guy we didn't even mention when we were talking about young back rows in England. So I think someone just to pick up that slack, really, and then let the other guys do the hard carrying.
Yeah, that's fair.
But did you see any of this game, Ed? The one at Scotland?
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't. It was just, I caught up with a few highlights, but just...
I saw it. It was very, very good. And it's also good to see Hugh Jones score. And you wonder, like, why did they not take him to the World Cup? Why?
Well, you can say that about Rory Hutchinson. But no, it was interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah. Hugh Jones, it was interesting what he said about Dave Rennie. He said, was he coming back from an injury? And he said he went to Dave Rennie and said, okay, well, where's my game at? What do you think? What do I need to do? And Dave just said, hey, just go and play. Forget it all. Just go and play. And he said that's actually been such a liberating thought for him. And those soft skills of man managers, it seems like with Johan, you've got a guy that knows when to crack the whip and when to put an arm around you.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most important job now for the guy at the top, that man management side of things, because... whereas before, maybe when I first started out at Leicester and the years before I was there, it was very much of I say you do, which worked really well, particularly with the squad they had. I think the players now have changed a lot. They question a lot. They want to know why they're doing certain things. So you've got to be on your toes and you've got to be able to manage those different personalities now. So it's interesting you say that. Quite often you find with the Kiwi coaches that they do have that side to their game or to their kind of personality, that ability to get on with guys and manage them well and give them the freedom to play. So I'm not surprised that you said Dave Rennie's just said that to him.
So
let him off the leash.
So just going on to the management thing, because I do think obviously it's very important. I was lucky enough to interview Johan a few weeks ago and just blew me away. Just absolutely blew me away. However, I was going to ask, I mean, you've seen quite a few directors of rugby now, you've seen quite a few pre-game speeches and so on and so forth. Does the act ever really grow old? Do you ever feel that you're watching the same video over and over again once you get into your 30s?
No, I think Johan's got a good balance. Obviously, when he first arrived, it was approached that the guys that had been there before weren't used to it. Something I wasn't used to from Leicester either, so it was really interesting. But he's obviously adapted and changed as well. So, he doesn't tend to say a great deal, particularly in the lead up to games, and then obviously the impact when he does speak or when he does feel the need to talk to the team is far greater. So I just think it's that balance that you might change as the seasons go or as the games go, how you approach. You might step back a little bit, you might then be a bit more vocal. So I think, as I said about that man management, that ability to recognise what the squad needs and when they need it.
He's like the... Johan's like the best example of walk calmly but carry a big stick, because he is... I've come into contact with him a fair bit. He's one of the most polite, the smiliest, the happiest, the kindest, the most giving... But then there's just something in his eyes that you can see. I don't want to upset you.
I also interviewed him when Gloucester came to the AJ Bell last game of last season and they lost, and I was expecting, I was basically expecting someone to be very, very harsh on Gloucester's performance. And he comes into the press room. He's obviously a big, intimidating bloke. But as soon as he speaks, he sort of fills you with confidence. There's no negativity about his team. In fact, if anything, it was just pure praise about everyone everyone that played. And you can sort of think, yeah, I could get behind this.
Yeah, I think if you remember that game, we sent, again, quite a young team up, didn't we?
Yeah, you did.
And they did really well. So I think he was really pleased with the effort they put in. I think for Johan, that's probably speaking for a lot of people, but, you know, he feels if he sees that effort, if he sees your work, your grafting, then he feels he can't ask any more of you. Sometimes the result goes against you. Sometimes you get it and you win and everything's great. But he kind of has that perspective, not just in rugby, but, you know, from where he's from in life around, you know, you can't get too eaten up or in a hole about a result. You just have to keep moving on and progress on to the next week. And, you know, that's how he lives his life. It's not just how he lives rugby. So he's pretty good in that respect.
Do you know what he did as a civilian job before rugby?
Yeah, he was a policeman, wasn't he?
Do you know what type of
police?
Do you know what type of police?
Riot police, wasn't it?
Not quite. Tim, do you know?
So not quite riot police.
Not quite riot police. I wrote along the same lines.
Horseback police? I don't know.
That's a hell of a horse.
That's a big old horse.
No, firearms instructor.
No, I mean, there was. Do you follow? Did you keep tabs on the Gloucester Twitter account? Because I want to recommend everybody goes and watches the video of him announcing the coaches have extended the contract. I mean, I might have to get the audio of it just to share it with people. But it was so good. I wanted him to shout, because you just reminded me of that with saying he was a firearms policeman. I wanted him to shout.
No, not firearms.
Get to the chopper.
Not firearms policeman, an instructor, Tim.
Some more great news this morning.
Uh-oh.
Coming, guys. It's great for me this morning to announce that Rory Teague and Tim Taylor has decided to prolong their careers here at Gloucester and to extend their contracts. Rory, congratulations.
Thank you.
And Timmy, congratulations.
Oh, bless it. I love him. It's like a scene out of a sitcom, though. I love it. No comment.
So,
obviously, Ed.
So I guess that is that is us wrapping up the Exeter game pretty nicely.
Oh yeah. Right.
Well done, Exeter.
Right. Here's a statement I will make. Prove me wrong. Virumi Vakatawa is currently the best player in European rugby.
Vakatawa. I think there's lots of good players in European rugby. He's probably one of the more effective, more flashy ones.
It's a very politician's type answer, JB.
Well, you know, I
there are lots of good players.
It's true, mate. Yeah. How can you say he's the best?
He's an outside. Yeah. Yeah. He's an outside centre. I mean, you know, how influential can you be? Someone's got to win you the ball. I thought Finn Russell was probably better. I thought Finn Russell was awesome.
Well, okay, fine. I'll make a different statement then. Fair enough. You put me in my place. Vakatawa was unreal today.
He was very good. Vakatawa's a really good player.
He's absolute class.
We can all. Yeah, he's outstanding. And is he in the front squad?
Yes.
So, I thought this was his last World Cup. I thought he retired. In fact, I'm sure he did.
No, well, clearly not, because he's in the squad.
No.
Yeah. How old is he?
I don't know.
So I thought he was like
no.
late 20s, about to retire, but no, completely wrong on that.
He's got a new passport again.
Well, sorry, late 20s is retirement age, is it?
Well, for the 4-year cycle, if you think about, you know, where he will be for the next World Cup.
Yeah, but he came in quite late, didn't he?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of why I'm thinking that he might be even older than that.
See, this is where Phil would just already have come up with an answer.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not Phil, but...
Yeah.
Can you not Google it quickly?
Yeah, I can.
I mean, I've got the clip up quickly.
I did. He's 27. He's 27,
oh, yeah, he's
JB.
He's fine.
So, I know it's cliche, but you know, you watch Raqqa this weekend, you watch Vakatawa, and you think how awesome it would be if they could play with like Radrada and Yato and all the rest of it. And I just think it's time that World Rugby get a grip on this and make sure that all Fijians can play for France.
he was outstanding. He was a game breaker today. Munster, I don't think they can really come away from Paris thinking that they let themselves down at all. The scoreline probably didn't reflect the result, and they were brave. I'm personally, on a very personal level, I'm gutted that Munster couldn't get at least a couple of points out of that one, at least a bonus point, because I'm working at the Munster game, and it just means there's going to be less people that are interested in the result.
Can they still go through though?
Yeah. But very unlikely.
It requires Saracens to
Gloucester,
lose.
Saints and Glasgow to lose.
Oh, right. So it's not just the permutations within the group, is it?
No.
It's everything else. Yeah, it's very unlikely. I tell you what.
I'm sorry, who are Glasgow playing?
Oh, and Saracens have to lose as well.
Yes.
Who are Saracens playing? Racing?
No, Glasgow.
Oh, Glasgow are playing Sale away.
At the AJ Bell. So
they got the Enya fixture.
Yeah, so they'll lose.
Right.
Yeah, it's
It's not looking good, I guess.
No.
So just
But you're right, Munster can't go through in third place, so they need Saracens to lose and Gloucester and Saints and Glasgow to lose.
This is a weird thing to say about a team that did so well and beaten Saracens and whatnot. But I look at them, I don't think that they're that good. Or should I say, I wonder why they are so good. Because they're not overtly flashy. They're not playing nice rugby. They don't have massive carriers. But what impressed me about them was how good they are at the breakdown. They don't seem to lose any breakdowns. And every time the ball is on the floor, they're so ferocious. I was actually putting out a tweet that I didn't think I saw them lose one of their own breakdowns. And literally, as I was about to press send...
Chavancy.
Yeah, someone came and stole the bloody breakdown. But they are awesome in that area.
They're a very physical side, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, just as you said, you pick out certain individuals, obviously, that play for Ireland for years. But they are, I think, you know, they've still got that kind of the guys coming through, the Irish guys coming through, still have that kind of hunger and aggressive... attitude towards playing for Munster, don't they? So
Jack O'Donoghue, for example, looks like a good young player.
Yeah, really good player. Really good player. And who's the other back row? Tommy O'Donnell. Tommy O'Donnell?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I also think he's handy as well. So
agreed.
Yeah, they've got some tough players.
But they're obviously trying to evolve things slightly because, I mean, they've been to more semi-finals than any other team. They've got one of the best pedigrees in Europe, but they've sort of got to a level, hit a ceiling that they couldn't get beyond. They've obviously brought in Larkham to try and evolve that, and it's going to take a little bit of time to get that balance.
The thing is, they've got that good problem, haven't they? Which is they've always got the foundation of hard work, physicality, yada yada yada. So they're never going to go that. They're never going to be too far off. Whether a coach can do it though, and take them to that next level, I don't know. I think you're going to need new players to reach that new height.
Well, Carberry, they're missing at 10 for starters.
Carberry. I mean, this sounds like a stupid question. Is he their starting 10 when everyone's fit?
Yeah, of course he is.
Why not Blundell?
That's why they sent him down there.
But why not Tyler Blundell?
Well,
I mean, if you're thinking about the best Munster team that you can put out...
Then in Carberry's 10.
Do you not have your best 15 with Carberry at 15 so you can get your best players on the field?
We got Haley, and they're talking about Matt Gallagher as well. So
yeah. I'm just saying. If you want all of your players...
I like Mike Haley. Anyway, yeah, I think that they'll be a work in progress. They're not going to get to the knockouts for the first time in 4 years, which is disappointing for them. But so that on the face of it, they're going backwards, but I think they'll go backwards to be able to go forwards.
Yeah. Actually, and also, it's a bloody hard group.
Yeah, too right. But Racing, just frightening when they turn it on. I don't know if this is happening more than often, but I'm sensing, Ed, that it seems to be happening more where games are closer until the last 20 minutes, more than it used to. Things are staying tighter and then busting open in the closing moments. Because it happened in your game yesterday. It happened for Northampton. It happened in the Munster Racing game. But I just my sense is that that's happening a little bit more. The last quarters of games games are sort of exploding into life a bit as people get tired.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell you exactly why, because, you know, fitness-wise, most teams are probably at similar levels. So I just guess it comes down to style of play or game plan, really, as to whether they can actually end up breaking a team down. Because, say, for example, a team that likes to play a lot, you know, like ourselves, can get put under quite a lot of pressure, particularly for the kind of first 40, 50, 60 minutes, as you say. And then is it then that, you know, opportunities start to open up as gaps appear or players sit off a little bit, and those things start to appear and we get more tries off the back of that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my guess on that is as much as it's physical conditioning, also mental conditioning to concentrate fully for 80 minutes and not make any mistakes is, you know, it's a pretty tough ask.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, there's still a lot of work to be done, I think, on the mental side of the game. You know, I still think there are tools that can be done and ways that you can train and scenarios that you can train as well that can help that.
I also think there's
your kind of USP and thesis as a coach, Ed, perhaps.
Oh,
what scenario training?
Well, it might be a fresh approach. You've identified something that you think that more work could be done.
Well, go on.
I agree. Obviously, I won't tell all all of my thoughts and secrets, but it's certainly an area of the game that I think can be improved.
Well, interestingly, there is an article by an NRL coach, and I looked into this because I don't know if you've heard of the mighty Didsbury Tok Ed, but they're a very successful club up in Manchester. And we have interchanges. So my question was, how do we manipulate interchanges? Because obviously it's different to substitutions, but there are some common themes. So there's this NRL coach who breaks down the fact that there's more points scored in an NRL game in the last in the last 10 minutes than at any other point, or something like that. Okay, so therefore the theory goes that do you want your best team on the field at the start of a game or your best team on the field at the end of a game? And I actually think that, you know, when you think about it like that, you want to be looking at your bench players a lot more, and maybe even starting off a weaker team and then finishing off with your stronger team, whether that be your Kyle Sinclairs for England or whatever it may be coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be difficult if you were having to chase 20, 30 points every week coming off the bench, isn't it? But
fair.
You know, if for example, you know, you're putting your weaker team out there to start, but you've seen emphasis like Eddie Jones has talked about with his finishers, hasn't he? And, you know, we talk about a lot, the energy and the impact of the guys coming off the bench is just as important as those guys starting the game off. So, you know, whether that's your stronger or your weaker players, I think, you know, whatever you have coming off the bench, they have to be adding to the game. So, you know, we do talk about that a lot. And as I alluded to, Eddie Jones has talked about that impact from the bench. And I think he's kind of changed his sides up to influence that as well.
Yeah. Now, just out of interest, what is your thesis for your sporting directorship masters? Or are you not allowed to say?
I can say. Yeah, it's the profitability of English rugby.
Ooh, that does sound exciting.
Wow, that sounds very on trend, Ed.
What, like at Premiership level, or
yes, yeah.
Oh wow.
So, I don't think it will ever be profitable, and more to the point, I don't think it ever wants to be profitable.
Hold on, what university did you say? Because quite often they put dissertations and stuff in the library. It's Salford. We can just nip up the road and go and get that one. It's a bit of a trek. Not going to bother.
Sorry, Jamie, you said you don't think it wants to be profitable.
I don't think... No, not really, no. I don't.
Why is that?
Because I think I subscribe to a theory given to me by my good friend Phil Logan, which is highlighted in Soconomics, which basically says that these rugby clubs, I mean, don't get me wrong, profitability, if they reach it, is a nice aside. But actually, the point of having a rugby club is to grease the wheels of other businesses and other deals that you want to do.
So if they had more money, they'd spend more money?
Effectively, yeah.
I think most clubs would like to at least break even.
I don't think
many people want to own a rugby club and lose a million plus,
but it depends,
a year, do they?
It depends how much they're earning from their ancillary businesses. So if you've got a business empire with billions, and then you go
this is speculation, though, isn't it? We don't know the...
Yeah, or millions.
We're talking about a rugby business as a business.
Yes.
You don't want to be a business losing money.
No, you don't. Unless that business's sole point is to grease the wheels of other deals for your owner, in which case it doesn't really matter. It's like owning a nice car.
In that respect, maybe. I don't know. But, like, you know, I was just looking at the bare facts of, you know, salary caps, wages, you know, club turnover, those things, and just trying to look at the direction that the club...
It's a funny one, Ed.
Game's going.
Salary cap is directly causing a limitation on your earnings. in a career that, that could be over with, you know, one injury, one tackle. Is there any part of, from a player's perspective, I mean, obviously, you understand why the framework's there, but it's kind of almost not in your interest in one respect, if a wealthy person wanted to pay you more money.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on how much the wealthy person wants to lose money, really, because you got to look at how much the clubs are bringing in against what they're spending. And in terms of wages, you've seen wages have increased a lot in rugby over the last kind of 5 or 6 years, which has kind of squeezed, obviously, the cap, which means there are kind of players in the middle that have probably not been able to get contracts, whereas they would have before. So, you know, how are we using the salary cap, you know?
Yeah.
At the moment, a lot of players are getting paid a lot more money than they would have a while ago, and the salary cap hasn't changed, and it can't necessarily change because they can't afford it to. So are players getting paid too much money? That's the question against the salary cap. If that was raised, then obviously that wouldn't be the question.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one because the flip side to that, and what I would argue ultimately, is rugby players are getting paid less. Well, it feels like you're getting paid less, but as the competition gets more competitive and more eyeballs come onto the you know, events of rugby, ultimately then everyone will get paid more. But it's a hard argument to make when you just want to, you know, pay your mortgage or whatnot.
Yeah, I just think a little bit like society, the money goes to the top, kind of the top percentage of earners. There's probably bigger gaps now in salaries in the squad.
Yes, you know, exactly. Which is the same in every
and the other
single
earners aren't earning as much. So
cap management is an art.
As I say, that's how you manage that salary cap level, isn't it? And it's difficult because you want to bring in quality players, and they cost money now and far more than they ever used to. And if you're a club trying to turn around your fortunes, you're adding another, you know, however much on top of that. So it's a really difficult kind of area.
Did you see the Esportif?
Yeah, you must have loved that.
I got sent that, yeah.
The locks being best paid on average.
did you go and buy your hooker dinner out of, you know, out of sympathy?
No. When you got three kids to feed as well, it doesn't quite add up. But no, I did see that. It's interesting. Obviously, it just adds to how important locks are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. As we know,
vital.
As we know.
Exactly.
Well, I think lock is definitely a position where within clubs and within squads and they are valued massively. But it's one of those positions that's not quite as fashionable, trendy. You know, but
locks these days is, you know, they're expected to do the work of a back row and have the hands of a centre, but also have the grunt of your front row of that kind of type five. So to have both is a difficult balance, isn't it? Finding those players that 100%. Have it all.
But I always think the best part about lock is you can make it into whatever you want, really. I mean, I guess right at the top of the game where you are, you've got to be all those things. But actually, the further down the game you get, you can be any one of those things and be particularly useful.
I mean, you can be a 6 foot lock.
Yeah.
In level 6, level 7, can't you?
Exactly. It's a very flexible position.
One, I'm just going to jump in with another game that, again, there was another game where there was a late surge as well. The Claremont Ulster game. What I really liked, the bit I liked about this afterwards, I watched this game and thought Ulster gave a really good account of themselves. I think they'll be in the quarterfinals again. They're showing real progress with Dan McFarland, an English coach who's been involved in Scotland, I think probably still unknown to most English people, but it'll be interesting to see a couple of years down the line. If there's a big Premiership job up, I really think he should be considered. But what I loved is, I think most Ulster fans would have come away from that game thinking, oh, we gave a really good account of ourselves. Shame we couldn't get a bonus point at the end, but never mind. Dan McFarlane was really, really disappointed. I loved the noises he was making. He's like, we let ourselves down there.
Yeah, and he's right to feel like that, because for large parts of that game, Claremont were playing their equals. You'd argue in the first half that Ulster probably had the rub of the green, which not many teams go to the stadium, which I can't
Stade Marcel Michelin. Have you played there, Ed?
I have a few times. Oh, my favourite stadium, I think.
Something else, isn't it?
I played there in a quarter final and it was unbelievable, yeah.
Quarter final, wow. What was the result of that one? I can't.
Sorry. I can't give you the score, but we lost.
Yeah.
We lost, yeah. It was a decent game.
Was that with Leicester?
That was with Leicester,
that,
yeah.
That was that.
Jordan Crane scored.
Did a
dodgy flop over the try line.
So that was Leicester before they decided that top four wasn't for them, traded you away, and then Gloucester were top four ever since.
No comment.
But Ulster are a team that are building. Well, how do you assess them? They're clearly on a journey. Yeah.
How good is John Cooney?
He's very good.
He's talking of players that are the best in Europe right now. He might be up there with that in terms of how he's playing.
Yeah,
I like the combination of him and Billy Burns, obviously someone I played with at Gloucester, who I think has really kicked on since he's gone there. But I like the way they play the game. I think they look like a confident side that enjoy playing with each other. They're obviously quite a tight unit as well. And people, you know, may have thought that Rory Best finishing up might have had a big impact, but they seem to have kicked on again without him, which is surprising considering he's a massive influence. So I really like the look of them. I think it is difficult to go to Clermont and win. So for them to come away and say they're disappointed shows that, you know, that there are signs of where the direction they want to go as a club. So
exactly,
it'd be interesting to follow them.
It was really interesting to hear that you think that the kind of soft skills of a coach are becoming more and more valuable, and I think that's what I think Dan McFarlane brings. I just get the sense from the way the players talk about it. In fact, every single time I've chatted to an Ulster player before a game, you know, doing an interview or a man of the match interview, they always bring up, you know, Dan always tells us fight for every inch, and our mantra this year is this. And it's just, it's really interesting. They seem to be
It's well thought out.
Yeah, and they seem to be totally in on his vision.
Yeah, I think you can see that from the way they play.
So that's kind of, is there any other kind of games or moments that jump out to you, Ed?
Well, it's funny enough, Ed texted me just before the podcast and asked us to talk about Sale La Rochelle.
That's right, yeah.
Jay, mate, neither of these teams are going through. They don't deserve to be spoken about.
I think it's important to the English listeners.
No.
Because there are some young lads on the slate. Do you want to talk about it now? Okay, we'll move on.
Do you really want... No, like,
no, no, that's fine. I just want to say, I thought James Williams, new 12 for Sale from the academy, looked very, very good. And also Tom Robot had a run out. And I think that's important because watch out for that name. He's going to be very, very good. As by the way, is James Williams, who played particularly well, as I mentioned before.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for them. And when they're up with you know, Ed's team and other teams that are still in with a hunt going into round six, they'll get a bit more airtime. You have to earn it, JB.
Exactly right.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah. So... one thing, right? So I stayed in the Hilton in Northampton, which I think is where...
Here we go.
Which I think is where, like, you would stay before a game at Saints.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There is no excuse. We're in the year 2020. There is no excuse to have that powdered pepper on the breakfast table.
Yeah. Now...
Yeah, do you have to put up with things like this? And, like, the one thing I will say in their credit is they don't have glasses the size of thimbles.
Yeah. This is on par, isn't it? Where... This is on par to when we discovered that in the Love Island house, they have instant coffee.
What?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there are some things in 2019 or 2020, as we all know, which isn't acceptable. So, yeah, I'm with you completely.
So, is that, you know, is powdered pepper... what is the best place to kind of go away? Because that would ruin my whole weekend, Ed. If I had, you know, some nice poached eggs and I had powdered pepper to put on top of it.
Mate, I'm just pleased to get a clean night's sleep when I go away before a game. I'm not looking at the pepper.
Do you prefer to travel the day before a game?
Yeah, generally, yeah.
Including trips to Bath?
We have done an overnight at Bath.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Why? Just because...
Was that a special occasion, a big game? Like, well, bigger than
no,
normal.
No. You know, people have different views, when they. For me, you know, I kind of like to switch on fairly early. So once I get to the hotel, I can obviously relax. And then once you wake up in the morning, your kind of mind's on it because you're in the hotel with the team and you're kind of onto your job, aren't you? So it's a very serious answer.
What do you do?
That's
the
just the way I find it.
This is a serious question, though, because obviously it's a long time before waking up.
Especially if it's an evening game.
Yeah. What on earth do you do? All day.
Cards?
Well, bits of me. You could see the physio, you know, stretch, bit of mobility, have a chat with a few guys. You might talk about the game. You know, do a few bits like play cards, as you say, try and get an afternoon kip in, just those bits, you know, but you kind of slowly bringing yourself into the day, into preparing for a game. So
I interviewed Ian Bolshaw, right? And
yeah,
he used to do this with beer. It's just come into my mind now. But the problem was, in France, they have kickoffs like stupid times, don't they? Like 9 o'clock kickoffs. So the team were in these hotels, and then they were doing it for home games too. They would go to the hotel at like 9 a.m. or wake up and then do the hotel thing. But they're in the hotel for 12 hours.
Yeah.
What you mean of the day?
Yeah. So you know they wake up, and by the time that they played, they played every game of cards possible. They were massively like over caffeinated. Just ready to go.
But the French teams do it differently, don't they? Like you say, I think before every game they're in a hotel, at home or away. So, yeah, I'm not sure I'd fancy that for a home game.
But coffee is an important one. And one thing I'm going to say is I really like London Irish as a club. I've got a lot of time for them. And I got a lovely welcome when I went to Hazelwood to do some filming bits and bobs. But they're
Sunbury, you mean?
Hazelwood in Sunbury, yeah. It's the Hazelwood complex.
Right, yeah.
But their coffee game is awful. They didn't have any machine coffee beans. It was only instant in the facility itself.
See, in Sale, because
aren't they just round the corner from somewhere with a? They have like a Costa or
not really.
Don't they have a gym round the corner or something? That's
No. It's not. There's no coffee shops like. Oh. Right nearby, so it's a poor coffee situation.
So at Sale, they had Crouch Grind coffee there because of Dave Seymour. So that largely solved the problem. But if it wasn't for him, they'd be on instant coffee too.
Well, we're lucky. I don't know if you've heard of extract coffee.
No, extract.
Extract coffee, yeah. Well, look them up. But Lee, who runs that, supplies us with beans. He's also supplied us with a proper commercial coffee machine that does the full job for us. So, we're lucky that we've got Lee on board. He's a big Gloucester fan and also happens to run a decent coffee business as well. So,
coffee with the boys is important.
It is. It's vital.
We've all become coffee snobs now, haven't we?
Exactly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, so when we look ahead to next week's fixtures, next weekend, it's weird that there is something on every single Champions Cup match, which...
Is that really? Because it feels like the opposite to this weekend when there's only a handful which really mattered.
Well, firstly, there's no Friday night Champions Cup match. I think there's some Challenge Cup games that will fill the gap there. But in Pool 1, you've got Benetton, Leinster. Obviously, Leinster are battling for a top seed in that one. The other game being Lyon v Northampton. If Northampton win away, they're putting themselves in with a great shout of getting one of the runners-up spots.
I don't think they'll win away. I really don't.
Have you just got your Carl Ferns? I mean, Lyon have got a proud home record.
Yeah, and that's why. Because they don't always show up well in Europe, but they do tend to show up fairly well at home.
Problem is, like, Lyon are quite high in the top 14 and they've got a big game against Toulon. I think it's second v third the following week.
I have a feeling, just a feeling, that they're going to put out a pretty strong team and they're going to try and do Northampton at home for the principal. It is a feeling.
Say hi to Fernsey.
I don't know, but that's my feeling.
Okay. Well, so you think it's going to be a...
I think Lyon will win that, and I think it's going to ruin everyone's party, which is a shame, because I really like Northampton.
Not Ed's party.
Not Ed's party, of course.
No.
In pool two, we've got... I think that one's a tough one to call, the Lyon v Saints. I agree that the really proud home record, Northampton. Did you see Chris Boyd after the game?
He said,
I want to apologise to all the fans. They've just got six tries and got the 5 points. He said, that was shocking. That was awful.
Benetton are good.
Dreadful.
Actually, not a bad team.
I know. Saints were not good, but again, late surge.
Well, they're winning when they're not playing well, and that's always a good sign.
Isn't it? Pool two, you've got Exeter hosting La Rochelle. So you think Exeter are going to get the 4 or 5 points and get a home quarter final?
I'd be amazed if they didn't. Stunned.
And Glasgow are away at Sale and needing to win to have any chance of getting through to the knockouts.
Don't know how that will go, is the answer.
I think Glasgow will probably...
I mean, Sale have got nothing to play for.
No, exactly.
So, yeah.
What team will they put out, being as there are Premiership games the following week? So I can see Glasgow winning that one. But pool three, you've got Ulster hosting Bath, so Ulster will get a knockout spot. Claremont are away to Quins, and you'd expect them to probably sneak a win against Quins.
Yes, very much so.
And so both will go through, leading on to Sunday, when it gets really interesting. So you've got Munster hosting Ospreys. Munster will get the 4 or 5 points. You would imagine that would be the shortest odds. Mm-hmm. And then Saracen play Racing, which is the real tasty one of the weekend. Where will that one be won and lost, do you think, Ed?
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it? Because Racing can score a try out of anything. Where will that be won and lost? Probably in the back line, I'd say. Isn't it? With the X-Factor players that Racing have got, can they undo Saris and their defence, really?
Mm.
And try and get the try. I think it'll be fairly even up front. I think Sarah's always show up well up front. I think Racing are strong there too. So it's whether they can get those X-Factor guys into the game and score some points down there. But, you know, you can not that everyone uses it, but you can take the plastic pitch out of it, can't you? Because it's two guys that play on plastic pitches, so they won't be worried about that.
And they've got Camille Schatt. Oh, my God, that guy.
He's a hell of a player.
Have you played against him?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Hell of a player.
Now,
massive fan.
Just on that, have I got this wrong? Did you beat Saracens last year, right?
At home we did, yeah.
Yeah. What is the difference when they just go full out? Why is it that they can just turn it on in the dramatic style that they do?
I think going back to your point about that last 20 minutes, you've seen many games, I think, where teams have led at half time or been, you kind of have parity with them at half time, but they just kick on that last 20 and just kind of seem to tear teams apart, don't they? But I think with their starting team, obviously it comes down, you know, you've got to look at the quality of the players first.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very, very strong squad. And then I just think they're so clear and set on how they play the game, how to react to certain things. The confidence, having won trophies and won many matches over the year, season through, they don't have many moments of doubt.
No, because I was absolutely convinced that you were going to beat them in the semi-final last year. Absolutely convinced. And
I think we just struggled a little bit to adapt. They put a lot of pressure on us, and they, you know, targeted certain players, and that was their plan, and it worked for them, and we probably just struggled to adapt to that.
Yeah. You are right about what you said. Now you've highlighted it about the last 20 minutes. Think about their wins against Exeter in the Prem Final. That was an absolute demolition last 20. And also, would you believe it, Leinster?
Yeah.
Same as them too. So yeah. I guess that's it.
They play like a boa constrictor kills. They're just like, we'll just squeeze you tightly, and then before you know it,
Yeah.
They play like a team massively over the salary cap.
But that's, can't get back there.
That's irrelevant in Europe because Racing's wages will be eye-watering as well. But you've got Finn Russell against Owen Farrell.
I love that contrast, by the way.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
The build-ups.
How do you think, this is semi-serious, how do you think Finn Russell avoids weight training? And do you actually think that he does? He can't look like that.
Is it you asking me?
Both of you. Actually, yeah, Ed. Because I assume your fly halves work out. I mean, you can't not work out in a rugby club, right?
Mate, tens, you know, they run the game. They sit in the middle of the park, don't they?
Yeah, but I mean, they're also vain. You know, you'd have thought he'd go in there and do some arm curls or something.
Look at Johnny Sexton. He was World Player of the Year.
Only Andy Goode's the anomaly, but
Johnny Sexton was the bosses, World Player of the Year, and
Johnny Sexton.
He's obviously not bothered about it either. Don't need to in that position.
Yeah, but look at Dan Carter.
Oh, hold on. There we go. I can hear everything again. The headphones stopped working.
Or Wilkinson back in the day. They're in great shape. I mean, I just think they must be really committed to not working out, in a rugby club environment.
Maybe they prioritise playing the game. Though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. I was just thinking, the greatest tens are never stacked.
Wilkinson and Carter were massively stacked.
Carter wasn't stacked.
Oh, come off it.
No,
you Google Dan Carter now. And you tell me that man is not stacked.
Topless, Dan Carter.
No. He is one of the great. He is the greatest ten.
All right. To be continued.
Okay.
Right.
Good genetics, JB. All right.
Maybe.
Yeah. Exactly. Quick, fast metabolism, fast twitch muscle fibers, then for the final game of the weekend, the final round of games is in Gloucester's pool. Are you just looking at? Yeah, JB just showed me a picture.
Stacked, he's stacked.
I wouldn't say stacked. He's just got low body fat.
Yeah,
he's got good definition.
He looks all right.
He'd be a better bodybuilder than a powerlifter.
Okay.
Right. Sorry, not bodybuilder. Oh, whatever.
Whatever.
I'm losing the will to live now. Pool 5 is the final one. If by this point there is still... Gloucester will definitely still have a chance to get through at this point regardless... But they'll know what they need to do. Would you think that could swing anything in your favour, Ed, knowing what the state of play is before you play?
Not really, because I think we have to go over there and win, don't we? So
potentially, you might be able to get through with bonus points.
I mean, that's highly unlikely, isn't it?
It is.
You've got to go and win the game. So yeah. I think it's pretty black and white.
Fair enough.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
No, but going to... All it is, right? Simple as this, Ed. Beat the four-time champions in their own patch. Simple, right? Done. Move on, and then you get a game away at the four-time champions Leinster on their patch. Beat them. Easy.
Yeah, well, then they inherit Leinster's seed.
No, that doesn't happen anymore.
Oh, does it not?
No. But then you're in the semi-finals of Europe, so, you know, what's the challenge, Ed?
You're two games away, Ed.
What's the incentive, boys? You know,
yeah. Show some ambition.
That's the way to look at it.
Go and beat Toulouse and then Leinster. Go on.
Well, I'm not sure I'll have much impact sitting on the sofa, but I'll pass the message on.
Yeah.
what really impressed me about Lewis Rees-Sammet in his post-match chat, I just said, you know, come on. So how much are you relishing the opportunity to go and play that? He went, oh, yeah, we're ready to go and beat Toulouse.
Yeah,
I love that fearlessness of youth.
It's cool, isn't it? Like, if you offered him a game on Wednesday with his schoolmates, he'd probably take it because he just wants to play. Like, yeah, those
plus,
are the days.
Yeah, plus he's fresh, isn't he, 18, 19. I bet he feels great by Monday after playing on Saturday, whereas, you know, most of us need about 5 days recovery. So
He's like, oh yeah, Cheslin Colby looked all right on the telly. I'm looking forward to playing him. Yeah, it should be good.
It'd be nice to meet him.
Actually, what a test! He probably will be if he starts. He'll be opposite Colby.
That'd be huge. That'd be huge test.
It'd be huge for him. Do you know who I think would be a bigger test for him? Uge, because he's got every dirty trick possible. and he's hell of a player too. Like, he's probably more. I mean, Colby does all the nice snazzy,
Wily.
Yeah, snazzy jumpy things, right? But you know, Uge's the man still.
Yeah, he's always been class, hasn't he? The way he moves, brilliant. Floats around the pitch.
And weirdly, I don't know. I'll say it anyway. I was talking to some of the American lads after the World Cup, we caught up with them in the airport, and they weirdly they said he's massive, which is not the feedback that I thought that I'd get.
So, yeah. Of Cheslin Colby?
No.
Of Uge?
Of Uge. He's not that big, but no, apparently he's quite a physical presence in real life.
Maybe it means something else in American.
Yeah, maybe. You know, yeah, it wasn't the first thing which I thought.
He's a massive player, means he's a great player.
Yeah, that must be it.
He's good on a night out.
Mind you.
Massive player. Player.
What a massive player.
Huge player. Yeah. Well, that'll be a proper test.
What? I mean, obviously the bookies are going to have Toulouse as heavy favourites for that one, Ed.
Right.
But in a way, that means, does that just mean shackles are off in a way? Let's give it a crack. I mean, with
yeah, but these are things we don't think about, you know. You say, like, the bookies have them as favourites. Yeah. Like,
yeah, you're insinuating, I mean, that they're checking the odds on their own games.
We don't check the don't get the odds at all. Don't know about this one.
Hey,
okay,
so let me put that in a different way. Toulouse have the players and the pedigree that you would have to respect as a serious team.
Well, yeah, they're a team that can win the league and can win Europe.
Yes,
you know, they're very good. Yeah, it's a massive challenge. You know, but
massive opportunity.
You've got to go out there you've got to go out there and play, haven't you? You've got to go out there. You've got nothing to be worried about. There's, you know, nothing to fear.
Hmm.
You just put it out there. See where we get to. I think we've got the players that can produce a bit of magic, score some tries.
Yeah, and
you know, I think we should take pride in our defence, as I stated earlier about our record in the league at the moment. So, you know, there's nothing that we should be doubting or worried about. We respect them.
I'll tell you what it is, Ed. It's what I always forget is, I remember when I was coming through, it wasn't just my brother was a good player. I was actually better than him when we were younger. But
you're that bloke in the pub.
Yeah, exactly. I'm that bloke in the pub. I used to, when I got to a bigger stage and a bigger level,
right?
I went inside myself. I couldn't handle it. But I remember when I used to chat to Nick before he had his, you know, the biggest moment of his career at that point. He'd be like, I can't wait for this. He'd just be really looking forward to it and really excited.
That's interesting. I think, you know, probably those guys, you find them less and less at the top level, because, you know, it'd be pretty difficult to have a successful rugby career if you couldn't play, you know, at the top in stadiums at biggest level. Yeah, they're obviously more important games, as you're saying. Well, but I think generally, you know, once you've got a bit of experience of those things, and then they all become one.
Who is the most confident player that you've ever met, justified or not?
Most confident player.
Someone that just backs himself, even when maybe he shouldn't be backing himself.
The most confident player I can think of, and rightly so, would be like Jordan Murphy, I'd say.
Really?
Yeah. In terms of just the way, you know, his kind of presence, the way he talked, and then obviously he was a class player. So,
yeah.
He springs to mind. I remember being in the changing room, and you know, he'd lead us out, and thinking, you know, I'm glad he's on our side. That kind of thing. So yeah, he's the first one that springs to mind. Otherwise, I'm probably, to be honest, I'm so in my own head thinking about the game. I'm not taking a great deal of notice of everyone else in terms of, you know, some guys are always, you hear the retching in the toilets. Like Aki,
Mark, oh, really?
Atkinson's one of those.
He's a retcher.
Yeah, he always has a retch before a game. Yeah,
I think that's weird. See, I can't imagine doing that. But I can't imagine.
No, but again, you've just said something. So again, when I was saying that I used to be overawed by a big stage, I used to spooked me, and I couldn't handle it, and that's why I never went on to beyond the level I got to. But exactly the same, the fact that me and JB are the kind of guys that are interested in what everyone else is doing is the reason we're sat here.
And well, look, I have to have a certain level of awareness, particularly if I've captained the side. You want to kind of look some people in the eye a bit around the changing room, obviously. But it's rare I'm looking at someone and going, not sure,
Interesting.
Do you know, I've just realised one thing before we go. I've just realised we've kept you from watching Love Island, which I imagine you're all over. You got it recorded,
no,
yeah?
No, it's more, I want to watch the final episode of, what's it? Don't Fuck With Cats on Netflix.
That's really good, that. Have you seen it, JB?
I've got a weird story about this, though. So I've seen the first episode. Is it basically that people are trying to hunt down people that mess with cats?
No.
It
starts out like that. There's an internet video.
Hang on.
There's an internet video of someone doing some. Yes, it's a real thing.
Okay, yeah.
There's an internet video of this guy doing some pretty heinous things to cats in a video. And these people that are cat lovers start this little community trying to become super sleuths, and it goes way beyond. Well, it goes way beyond what I imagined it would go to.
Really?
It's only three episodes, but it's.
So I started watching it, and I sort of semi-watched it. So I might go back and watch it tonight then. But
give it a go, yeah.
The reason I say that is because I have something very, very similar myself, actually. So I've hunted. this is really weird. I've hunted two.
You need to clear up what that is.
From what I've seen, I have.
You don't own any vacuum pack bags.
No, I don't own a yellow vacuum cleaner. But I've hunted two internet trolls, basically to their streets. One into a street in America, in a town called Wellington. And another one.
What were they doing?
To Glossop. So weirdly,
they didn't just call you a bell end or anything.
No, the first one was. Do you remember there was a spate? Oh, this is quite deep and serious now. But there was a. Do you remember the London Bridge attack? Well, before that, we had the attack on Manchester, right? And one of the things which happened is people started posting these fake pictures or fake stories, like my son is missing. Please contact the Holiday Inn. They all say that that I mean?
Yeah.
So during the London Bridge attack, someone posted this thing like, this is my little brother, have you seen him, please retweet this. So I went on his Twitter profile because it's just such outrageous behavior, and literally just by doing what they were doing on the show, you could find out a picture of this and this is there, and you find him on Google Maps. Anyway, I located him to one street in Wellington, Wisconsin, and the other one basically just called me a bellend. So and found them in
what
Glossop.
Did you do once you found out that information?
Well,
did you then
the problem
message
is,
them back?
Yeah, the problem is with that one, right, is you get so close, but you can't actually locate the actual door. So if you knew exactly who they were, I would happily have sent that tweet over to their employer, because I think it's so awful.
Yeah, but you need to watch that show and do a little bit more cross-referencing, check out...
The one in America, right, I was phoning, I was emailing real estate agents because he'd taken pictures of certain areas, and there's a real estate thing, so it's like, well where's that? Emailed the guy emailed me back, like it was pretty in depth. And then the next one, it goes on and on and on, but I've got a little message on my phone which will get in contact with me every 3 months, I think. So I'll just go through his history again until I finally find him in Glossop.
Fair play.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
But so you're not going for the whole Love Island thing, Ed?
No, summer series only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ed. I'm with you. I'm not interested in Winter Love Island. There's no point in it. Not having it.
But will it be the talk of the dressing room tomorrow?
No, only summer. Only summer Love Islanders.
No, I'm interested to speak to Jamal. Now you've mentioned he doesn't like rugby. So I'm just going to pick his brains a little bit about that.
Does he talk about his wrestling career much?
No, not really. I mean, we bring it up more than he likes to bring it up.
Mm.
It's one of those ones,
He likes cars and gaming.
He probably wishes we didn't know about it.
Gaming, he's got a Twitch channel, hasn't he? He does a lot of gaming.
Gaming, politics.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
Current affairs. Those are the things that he likes.
Yeah, I like this.
Sport is a distant eighth.
I might get a Jamal Grower. Like, it'll be like one of those wrestling and Twitch, but no, I'm joking.
Well, Ed, listen, I'll just tell everyone to go and listen to the Podding Shed with Aki and Slates. It's a hoop.
Thank you. Are you going to have Mark on?
We've had Mark.
I'm happy to admit he is far funnier than me.
Oh, I mean, we're happy to admit that too.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
No, Mark's already filled in once. I think.
Yeah, he has.
Look at that to himself.
He has.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He said, he explicitly told us not to tell.
Okay. I'll bring that one up.
We wanted to give him his recovery day, whereas we wanted to rescue from...
And don't forget the remarkably talented Sam Roberts too.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now it's just become loving.
Yeah.
We don't like to give Sam too much credit.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he prove himself? He proved himself to you, didn't he? When there was it wasn't. I'm thinking of someone else. Don't worry, forget me. Don't worry. I was thinking of the whole Dimes Gloucester thing, and I was thinking of the Dimes Kings Home thing. That wasn't Sam.
Sam Peters. That was it. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, I remember that. It was kind of good because we'd been battered that day, haven't we, by Sale? All the stories were about him and Sam Peters having an argument in the corridor.
It's literally.
I'm quite pleased with that.
It is one of the world's most ridiculous arguments ever. I'm not going to go into it now. It's water under the bridge, but it is ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous.
So, like, if Gloucester can pull off a famous victory next weekend, you could be back and available come quarter final time.
I could be, yeah. Yeah, I could be. What dates are the quarters again? Are they
It's March now. It's after.
March?
Towards the end of March. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. I'm hoping to be back middle of Feb, but you never know with metatarsals. So, you just got to play it by ear. So it could be a few weeks. Could be less.
Yeah. Well. Best luck with your recovery, mate. And hopefully, we will be seeing you on a rugby pitch sooner rather than later.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Nice one, Ed. Speak soon, buddy.
Cheers.
Take it easy.
I think I'm going to edit out my thing about don't fuck with cats.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. Ed's still there, by the way. He can still hear us. I've pulled that down. So if you can still hear us, I'm turning you off now, Ed, in a bit.
See ya.
Oh.
I've said it that bit out as well.
That's fine.
Yeah, because it makes you sound like an absolute psychopath.
Mate, it's fine.
Right, let's do a proper exit.
What a thoroughly nice thigh-slapping chap Ed Slater is.
We didn't get too much rugby, though, did we?
No.
To match the permutations of the ins and outs of the league and whatnot.
Yeah, and if you are still listening, then...
Well done, you.
Well done. And can I apologise to... Well, I know we have fans of Leinster. I didn't see the game. I don't know anything about the game.
Yeah, and I also apologise. We should have spoke more about Sale, but we can do that next week.
Right, thank you for listening. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at JBeardmore, I'm at Cocker. And enjoy your week. Tell your mates, and we'll be back for the final round of pool matches in the Champions Cup next week.
Right. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.